This is Rain Hamcast number 49, voiced by Will Rogers, K5WLR, and posted September 4th, 2021, on both the RainReport.com and on the YouTube Rain Report channel. See the link on the RainReport.com's main menu. What kind of propagational changes occur in the D layer in the winter versus the summer? How does propagation affect vertical versus horizontal HF antennas? Do lunar or solar eclipses affect HF propagation? These questions and more are answered in this second excerpt from a conversation Rains Hapali, KC9RP, had with Carl Lutzelschwab, K9LA, an Indiana ham who has studied HF propagation for decades. Carl is the newly appointed ARRL Central Division Director. His interest in HF propagation goes back to his novice days in 1961. Hap recently spoke with Carl about the role the ionosphere plays in daily HF communication.
Radio stations, of course, as you have already alluded to, benefit from the D layer, but only at night because during the day there's not enough, as you say, electrons there to act as a mirror. It's more like a sponge during the day. On 740 AM on broadcast band radio, there is a Canadian station that we hear during the winter at night very well. But during the summer, it's not good at all. What's happening there?
Well, during the summer, the D region is a little bit more ionized. It has more free electrons. And as I said earlier, the D region generally, for most of our amateur radio activities, is a detriment. It causes reduction in signal strength through absorption. That's the big difference. There's a difference in the D region between summer and winter, and of course, where we are in a solar cycle, too. Generally, when we're at solar minimum, summer and winter aren't as different as if we were at solar maximum. And as we go lower in frequencies, if we go to 2200 meters, our lowest band, 137 kilohertz, even the D region has enough ionization to refract that. So 2200 meters doesn't get very high into the ionosphere at all, and it can propagate very well. Unfortunately, antenna efficiency is a big problem at 137 kilohertz. Man-made and even atmospheric noise is a problem. There will be limited results on 2200 meters, but our next highest band, which is 630 meters, which is 475 kilohertz, it's obvious that we can make worldwide contacts, even though our power is limited and the antenna efficiency is somewhat reduced. But it appears to be very similar propagation-wise to 160 meters and what we can work. But we have to remember that the D region forms during the day. It pretty much disappears at night. I say pretty much because there's still electrons there. There's still enough to affect 2200 meters. It's very obvious that the D region plays havoc with AM broadcasts from distant. 740 is Toronto. There's also a French station on 860 that I listen to. I think they're probably in Quebec speaking French. What helps a lot nowadays is AM broadcast SWLs can use receive antennas that are directional down on the AM frequencies. And it's amazing to switch directions on such an antenna and have a new station pop up and the other one went away because of the direction. Probably the most widespread known is a Beveridge antenna, which was invented by Harold Beveridge way back in the early 1920s. Because he did take it over to Scotland to listen for American amateurs back in 1921, the transatlantic tests. The 100th anniversary is coming up here in December. They're four square, which is just four vertical arrays, and they're phased to allow you to rotate the pattern around the compass. And there's a lot of other receive antennas that can do the same thing. Mostly they're used on 160 meters. Of course, they do a lot of good on 80 and even on 40. And what they do is instead of receiving noise from all around the compass like a vertical antenna would, They have a narrow front lobe pattern, kind of like a Yagi, and that picks up less noise also. So it helps in improving the signal-to-noise ratio if you point your antenna at the station you're looking for. We've made a lot of progress over the years in low-noise receive antennas, and I know a lot of AM broadcast band shortwave listeners use them too, to DX into Europe and wherever. There are smaller antennas that do the job. I have what's called a shared apex loop. It's four triangular loops that share a common mast, about 20 foot high, and it's about a 40 foot diameter. That's certainly smaller than a beverage, which could be 500 to 1,000 foot long. And it works very well on 160, and I also use it on AM broadcast band because it does work very well down on those frequencies. It's really amazing to point the antenna one direction and hear one station, point it the opposite direction, and there's another station.
I suspect the lunar eclipse has no influence on propagation.
That's right. The lunar eclipse may have a very small effect that probably wouldn't be recognized in our operation. But of course, solar eclipses sure do. When there's a solar eclipse, the moon blocks the solar radiation from the sun, and therefore the ionosphere generally decreases in the amount of ionization. On the lower bands, that's great, and that's why we can have daytime propagation during a solar eclipse on the lower bands, on AM broadcast band 160. On the higher bands, the fact that the solar radiation is blocked means the MUF, the amount of ionization, goes down, and we kind of lose the higher bands. There's been some great papers on the great 2017, I think it was, solar eclipse. That was pretty close. We got another one coming up, and I think it's 2024. It's going to be even better, at least for those of us in Fort Wayne. It's going to be closer to the total eclipse line, where the sun is just about all blocked. And again, it has to do with the solar radiation not impinging on the atmosphere and how it changes the ionosphere.
I recorded WWV, the time station, in 2017, before and after the eclipse, and be hearing 10 megahertz WWVH from Hawaii in the middle of the day.
The effect is not a very long effect, but it certainly can be seen in measurements, and we even had a solar eclipse party back in August 2017, and it was very clear how the eclipse affected the various bands. The lower bands improved, the higher bands got worse.
You're listening to HF Propagation 101 as described by Carl Lutzelschwab, K9LA, who has spent a lifetime studying the ionosphere and its D, E, and F layers, all of which respond to whatever the sun dishes out. We'll conclude our conversation with Carl after you identify your station. This is Rain Hamcast number 49. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Rain Hamcast
from KC9RP.
You hear discussions about vertical versus horizontal propagation. How does HF type long distance, thousands of miles, affect your polarization?
Well, we have to remember the ionosphere is immersed in the Earth's magnetic field, and what that does is causes two indices of refraction in the ionosphere. We generally think of the characteristic waves that go through the ionosphere is either the ordinary wave or the extraordinary wave. And all they are is just a result of the fact that the ionosphere is immersed in a magnetic field. Now, what's important is what's called limiting polarization. In other words, what's the polarization at the entry point of the ionosphere and what's the polarization at the exit point? We don't care what the polarization is as the wave goes through the ionosphere. We care about when it comes out and when it goes in. And what we should try and do is match our polarization to what the ionosphere dictates it should be. That can be very involved, and it could maybe lead you to making a circularly polarized antenna instead of just having our horizontal Yagis and our vertical trap antennas. But it's a lot of trouble, and I'm not sure how valuable it is, how much it helps really for all the trouble to go with. I believe that the best thing you can do is put up a horizontal antenna that emits horizontal polarization, and it may couple the best into the ionosphere. It may not, but it generally works pretty good over a long time. And of course, a horizontal antenna doesn't pick up as much noise as a vertical antenna. And a horizontal antenna is not as dependent on your ground conditions as a vertical antenna. The best thing to do is just kind of ignore polarization. Try and put up a horizontal antenna at a good height. But if all you can do is put up a vertical, then do it and just realize that your results will depend a lot on how much time you spend at the radio.
Isn't it somewhat dependent upon the takeoff angle of your signal?
Right. The ionosphere determines what the best path is from point A to point B. In general, long distance paths are better with antennas that radiate a lot of their energy at low elevation angles. And what that means for verticals, that they generally, if you have a good ground system, they'll give you good vertical polarization at low elevation angles. Horizontal antennas depend on their height above the ground. The higher the horizontal antenna, the lower the elevation angle.
Why are ground systems so important?
Well, ground systems with verticals are important because they reduce ground losses. And that's the whole purpose of an extensive ground system. Just like the AM broadcast stations generally have many radials around the compass that are generally a quarter wavelength. And they're doing it just to put the maximum field strength into the ground wave. In other words, trying to not lose so much of their signal, heating up the worms down there. We're just starting in cycle 25. We've been through a long solar minimum. And generally what a long solar minimum says is we're going to have a small next cycle. But the sun's not going to do what we think it's going to do. It's going to do what it wants to do. But like I said earlier, we should expect improving propagation on 15, 12, and 10 meters as cycle 25 ramps up. And as we move into the fall and winter months, when the ionosphere in the northern hemisphere is better, you've got to realize that the three major ham populations are in the northern hemisphere, North America, Europe, and Japan. The VHF and UHF bands don't depend too much on the sun and where we are in a solar cycle because they're mostly line of sight. The ionosphere just cannot be ionized enough to refract 2 meters and above. For new hams who have been licensed in the past, oh, say 5 years, they probably wonder what's so great about 15, 12, and 10 meters. All I can say is, let's wait a couple of years and you'll be surprised at what you can work with modest antennas and modest power. Solar maximum, even though it may be a small one, is going to really liven up those bands. And it might even help 6 meters also. Of course, use the digital modes on 6 meters because the digital mode guys are working stuff that the CW and sideband guys don't even hear. So you want to be active on 6 meters throughout a solar cycle. Get on the digital modes.
FT8.
You bet. Yeah.
If someone wants to contact you to learn more about our amazing ionosphere, who do they email?
You can email me at k9la@arrl.net. I also have a website with lots of propagation stuff on it, k9la.us. That'll get you there. Lots of different links to different aspects of ham radio. For example, 160 meters, HF. I write a monthly feature about a variety of topics. There's a whole bunch of those on there. So go to k9la.us for lots of propagation stuff. Also on my website is a great book by Bob Brown, NM7M. He's a silent key. It's called The Little Pistol's Guide to HF Propagation. It's not in print anymore, but you can download a PDF. It's about 15 megabytes. If you're using dial-up, you're going to be on there a while. But it's a great introductory book on HF propagation. very well written and simple to read. So lots of information out there. Of course, there's lots of other websites too.
And of course, there's WWV. We mentioned National Bureau of Standards in Fort Collins, Colorado on 2.5,
right.
5, 10, 15, yep. 20, and 25 megahertz. So.
Yeah. There's also a good website to look at maybe every day is spaceweather.com. It's written by Dr. Tony Phillips. He has all kinds of good parameters on there, the K index, the sunspot number, the solar flux, and he also has lots of text about various things that are going on in space weather type topics. spaceweather.com. One of the things that I like to look at, go to qrz.com. There's a very colorful banner by N0NBH on there. The A index, the K index gives solar flux. It gives the sunspot number. It gives the extreme ultraviolet radiation, which I'll mention again that it's the true ionizing radiation of the F2 region, which is real important. Gives some other information, solar wind speed, and all of those have an impact on space weather propagation and how propagation is. One of my recent monthly features on my website was interpreting space weather and tying it to HF propagation, and it's focused around that N0NBH banner. So it might be interesting to read. I believe we don't need all the information that's out there. There's some critical parameters that if we have a basic understanding of them, we can get a general idea of what's going on propagation-wise. We have to remember what we're trying to do is take very complicated processes in the atmosphere and the ionosphere and make some simple statements. A lot of times that works okay, but there are a lot of times that doesn't work okay because the ionosphere is very dynamic in the short term, and we just don't fully understand all those short-term variations.
That concludes Hap Holly, KC9RP's conversation with HF propagationist Carl Lutzelschwab, K9LA, who began studying HF propagation when he was a novice class licensee in 1961. This summer, Carl was appointed ARRL Central Division Director. If you do contact Carl, let him know Hap sent you. This two-part Rain Hamcast HF Propagation 101 can be found on both the rainreport.com and on YouTube. See the main menu on the rainreport.com for the Rain Report YouTube channel link. Copyright 1985-2021 Rain. All rights are reserved. Rain programming is made available under a Creative Commons license. Permission is granted for you to download, share, post, and transmit this biweekly hamcast over amateur radio in its entirety. Your feedback and support for this hamcast are welcome on the rainreport.com. YouTube technical assistance, Tom Shimizu, N9JDI. By the way, congratulations to Hap and Stephanie on their 45th wedding anniversary, celebrated August 28th. Rain Hamcast number 50 will post September 18th. 73 from the Radio Amateur Information Network, Rain. I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR. Keep on hamming.